The Uranus-Chiron opposition was in play from 1951 to 1991. Whenever you have an aspect like this that's ongoing for a long period of time, like the 6-ish years in the 1960s when Pluto and Uranus were conjunct, or for this one, which is 40 years, you can look at things from a collective angle and look at how society and culture evolved, shaped, was transformed. You can look at the events that affect us collectively. And there is probably a very rich opportunity in there looking at that, kind of rethinking a lot of what that time has to do with, given this Chiron Uranus opposition, when Chiron didn't enter our vocabulary till 1977. So no one was looking at this during, for well over half of that period of time. What you're going to hear today, though, is aimed toward the individual side of things. And I tend to shy away from looking at things collectively just because I'm very interested in helping people understand themselves better. And I look at the birth chart and all the different ways that we can look at it, adding in transits, progressions, returns, solar arcs, locational stuff, adding all that stuff in. It is a manual for how we're wired. So, what I want to do today is help you get inside this Uranus Chiron opposition in your own chart if you're born between 1951 and 91. And if you weren't, I will bet you know a lot of people who were born during that time. So it's 40 years of time. So the birth chart is a manual for how you're wired. And I look at everything from the karmic angle, looking at how we are wired from our experiences in other lives, how we are emotionally imprinted by our experiences in other lives. And for a lot of us, this Uranus Chiron opposition will be tied in with our karmic stories or karmic histories, but kind of the scope of this will be outside that. And just for your reference, if you were born with Pluto conjunct Uranus, so from about 1962 to 1968, what it means is that your Chiron is opposing your Pluto. So Chiron for you is a major influence in your soul's deepest desires and your soul's deepest wounding. So just a note for that subset of people. There's a lot to look into with that in order to understand what your soul came here to do and how you've been shaped in your many lives with your Plutonian empowerment journey. I'm going to look at each of the two bodies in question, Uranus and then Chiron, kind of exploring what each is about, looking at kind of the archetypal journey for each one, giving you some keywords for what each body is about, but really to help you get into understanding more deeply, beyond keywords, what each is about. So with Uranus, the bottom line is that it's about creating freedom for ourselves. Wherever it shows up in your chart, it's about creating freedom. Not that everybody does it. Not that if you do it, you like what you get, but it's this individuating impulse. The part of us that says, yeah, I know, I recognize I'm surrounded by conformity and structure, and in some ways I'm sure that's great for all you people, but I really need to do it my own way. So it involves a lot of breaking free of what's happening around us. But all archetypes represent a range of possible expressions. With Uranus, you have at one end, one extreme, totally and utterly free. At the other end, totally and utterly bored. Right? Because the feeling is almost what matters more than the circumstance of your life. Because for one person, freedom would look a lot different than for other people. Not just only considering context, where you find yourself, but also what freedom means to you. Like, you can be in a situation that's full of rules, except you can think freely and be happy, right? So there are all these different things. So this feeling of freedom or the feeling of boredom, these are the two extremes of our experience of the archetype. Because you don't have to create freedom. You don't have to individuate. It's just about the part of us that does that. And everybody has free will. Nobody has to do anything. Uranus also represents individual genius, and so everyone has some form of genius. It's the part of us that it's not about intuitive knowing, but it's about flashes of knowing, and we don't know where it comes from. So there's a lot about Uranus that requires us to live in certain ways. You know, if we go down the Uranian roads in different ways that shows up for us, we do have to kind of shape our lives in certain ways. So for a lot of people, it requires solitude. Uranus is about your own personal vision. And in order to identify that, in order to locate it, define it, tap into it, and then actually work towards it, sometimes you have to go off and be by yourself for sometimes long stretches of time. And if we don't choose solitude, what we actually absolutely have to do is to shed some external ideas of how things are supposed to work. We're all surrounded by expectations and rules, regulations, requirements, and in order to do the Uranian thing, get it down on paper, and then eventually do it, and then eventually offer it back to people, which is the ultimate purpose of our having a vision, is to bring it back to help other people, which is where you get the humanitarian side of the Uranian archetype. With all the planets, we have major life cycle events at different parts of their orbits at different ages in our lives. The Uranus cycle is about 84 years, and that's its orbit around the sun. And so when we hit about half of that, and because the orbit of Uranus is slightly elliptical, it's not an exact age. It's going to vary for different people, from ages around 38 to around 44. The people who are born late 1966 to 1968, who might be listening to this, those dates, at least as of the time this was recorded, which is late November 2009, those people were having the Uranus opposition. You know, everybody who lives into his or her 40s will have the Uranus opposition. And so I just want to offer you a note of, you know, if you're having it right now, or if you're about, or if you did have it, maybe this can help contextualize things, or if you're about to have it, you can kind of see what's coming. Because this, you know, urge to create freedom, you know, we can choose or not choose. And when the Uranus opposition happens, we get light from Uranus, essentially shined on our own Uranus. So your transiting Uranus comes and asks this question: are you free enough? Is what you're doing to be free enough? Have you chosen the right kinds of freedom? This kind of thing. Uranus also always wants sudden action. And so this is actually what when we talk about midlife crisis, this is actually a big part of it. Another part of it can be the Neptune waxing square. But a big part of it is the Uranus opposition, where we're suddenly confronted with the ways in which we're not free, but we actually really maybe need to be free. You know, my teacher says that we have this sense that half of our lives are over, this kind of unconscious sense. And so we kind of, lots of us feel inspired to spring into some kind of action in order to change things, perhaps because we have fear getting old, but perhaps not. Perhaps just, you know, I had a vision of where I was going to be when I was younger at this age, and I need to do something to kind of either maintain that or get back to it. And this is where we get the stereotypes of, you know, younger spouses and red sports cars, etc. So the question is, are you free? The answer is, you know, what are you willing to do to be free? And lots of Uranian action is impulsive and quick and frankly without thinking. So one of the things is to honor this part of yourself if you're having this Uranus opposition, but also to learn how to keep some things in focus and context in your life. And like I said, if you're born with Pluto Uranus conjunct in Virgo, right now it's opposing both of them. So there's also a karmic angle with Uranus now opposing your Pluto, which is a marker of the soul's deepest desires and wounding. So there are more layers in there for you. Moving on to Chiron, I want to spend more time on Chiron than on Uranus because some of the stuff that I've been channeling about Chiron is new information. Is not available, you know, in all the literature, and so I want to kind of spend some time teasing it out because, as I talk about the Uranus-Chiron opposition in your chart, these ideas about Chiron are going to come into play. So the myth that we have received says that Chiron is a healer, a musician, a martial artist, a warrior, you know, all of these things, these keywords we have associated with Chiron. Also alternative medicine, all these kinds of things. And he trains heroes before they go off on their great quests. And so he's a tutor, he's a teacher, he's a mentor. At some point in the stories we receive about him, because the details do vary, he is inadvertently wounded by a poisoned arrow, some say of his own creation. And this happens in his foot, and he's immortal. And so when he's poisoned, he gets sick, but he can't die because he's immortal. So as a clever healer, he goes around and tries to figure out how to heal himself, but he can't do it. It's not possible, because this poison would kill anyone who didn't happen to be immortal. So the only thing that he can figure out to do is to make a deal to change places with Prometheus, who is having his liver eaten out on a daily basis by a liver-eating giant vulture. And by making this deal, he forfeits his immortality. And so he then can take the place of Prometheus, and then as his liver is eaten out, he actually can die. So what we've received in the myth is that you can help someone else with a situation that you cannot help yourself with. And that's where we get this idea of the wounded healer. Chiron's a healer, but he's wounded, and he cannot heal. But when he offers his gift to somebody else who's in this perpetual suffering, Chiron's case, he can actually help Prometheus in a way that Chiron cannot help himself. So this is the myth as we've received it. What I focus on is that there are actually two wounds. Wound two is, these deep wounds that inspire suffering. Wound two is this poisoned arrow. And so, yes, this is a major thing. It leads to his death, etc. But wound one is much more important. And as everybody lives this archetype, wound one is the key to everything. Chiron's been in our vocabulary since 1977, and whenever a new archetype comes in, people, astrologers will rush in to look at it, to feel it out, to intuit it, to use it in charts and do research and to see, what that means, what it has to tell us, what it can show us about ourselves. And so for the last 32 years, that's been happening. I found a lot of great work on Chiron out there. I've learned a ton about Chiron before I started channeling from some ascended masters, new ways to think about Chiron. And yet, a lot of what's been said about Chiron, and especially a lot of what's been distilled, kind of trickled down into the collective consciousness about Chiron, has a lot to do, frankly, with whining. Whining about pain and suffering. When we focus on wound two, the poisoned arrow wound, as the meaning of the story, it's easy to see ourselves as beings who suffer and to, in some ways, unfortunately, take on some identity of being beings who suffer. Carolyn Mace calls this woundology, defining ourselves in terms of the wounding that happened to us. And this is a very, frankly, Piscean age situation. So what I want to offer with the refocusing attention on wound one, and the opportunity that's in there is kind of the pre-Aquarian age take on how Chiron is, how Chiron can be useful for us in shifting in the ways that we have the invitation right now to shift. So that leads to my retelling of Chiron's story. And you'll find this if you look it up. It's just how we've latched onto it in the last 30 or so years doesn't reflect this. So Chiron's origin story is that his mother, who is some kind of nymph, her name is Falleria, and she is running around with her pals and doing whatever they do, enjoying life. And from afar, Cronos sees her and wants her. And she takes the form of a horse to flee. He really wants her, so he takes the form of a horse to catch up to chase her and catch up to her. He ultimately does overtake her. And this is not the word used in the story, but he essentially rapes her. He wants her, she runs away, he overtakes her, he forces himself on her. She gets pregnant. When the baby is born, she's back to her humanoid self. She's back to looking like a person, as she did. But when the baby is born, he's half horse, half human. She didn't expect this at all. On first sight, she looks at Chiron and says, "Get this monster away from me." I'm paraphrasing. But that's the idea. Get this monster away from me. The kid had some feature that she did not expect, and that scared her. So she rejected Chiron at birth. He's handed off, and he's raised, and, by some other god, and things go well for him. He gets mentoring, and, life is not horrible for him, even though this rejection at birth happened. But we have to know, we have to assume that this is pain. We have to assume that this rejection causes him pain, but we don't hear a lot about in that mythology. We hear about his resourcefulness, his cleverness, his work teaching and healing. We hear about all that stuff, but we don't hear about the pain. But we have to assume that that's a reality. We have to assume he has it. So, as we live this myth, as we live this archetypal journey of Chiron, and we have all the archetypes in us, but I've noticed that some people let's say that I throw an asteroids into a chart, some people will not be conscious of or not have availability of emotional information about their Pallas Athene, right, or their Ceres. Some people will not have conscious access to all of these archetypal journeys. But Chiron seems more universal. Chiron seems that everybody experiences this. How this plays out for us in our lives is a rejection very early in life, if not at birth. And I'm talking like anywhere from a few weeks to a few months to a year and a half old. A rejection by the parental figures we're imprinted on. When we're babies, everything comes from them. They are gods and goddesses. They are our god, our goddess. And the Chiron part of ourselves is something that makes them uncomfortable. So as we just are what we are, or we do something that fits with the symbolism of our Chiron, we sense a rejection by our parents. Sometimes it's you reach for something and they're trying to train you not to reach for that particular thing, right? Or sometimes it's simply the reality of the depth of your emotional expressiveness that might catch them off guard. People who are having babies now might have that sense, oh yeah, there is somebody already in there, right? There's a whole fully developed being, a soul that's in there. But think about this. If you're born previous to maybe the mid to late 90s in culturally progressive places, then it might be startling for a parent to look in your eyes, look in this infant's eyes, and see the depth of emotional sensitivity. Lots of Chiron stuff can be reflective, and especially in families where Chiron's an issue, so that maybe mom is changing your diaper and you're at 3 months old and she happens to just kind of glance in your eyes, she's talking to you, and she sees in you some depth of sensitivity that catches her off guard. She might react negatively and you might get imprinted with this idea that if I show myself, if I do this, then I'm not going to be loved. Because you're looking at the parent as everything. Everything comes from the parent. Everything is love. And the parent is the sole source of love, parent or parents. When it turns into behavior, it's that we're not lovable if we do the thing symbolized by our Chiron. I worked with a client a few months ago who had Chiron in Virgo in the 11th. And I told her this story about how she may have done something when she was an infant. And I said, just looking at Virgo and the 11th, Virgo about choosing the 11th, about the kinds of people we want to be with and hang out with. I said, you know, imagine yourself being, you know, 14 months old in your mother's arms at church, and you trying to crawl over her shoulder to get to the woman behind you. You just liked her. You know, the woman sitting in the pew behind you. You just liked her, and you might have reached out for her, and you might have vocalized and tried to get to her, and the mother would say, "Oh, we don't do that." You know, so might like pulling you back from reaching for what you want. And she said, "Yeah, I never felt like I belonged with my family, and I was always looking for, you know, that other place to belong." And so that would be Virgo 11th. But it can happen. You can translate all of the symbols around the chart, all of the signs and houses, into baby infant behavior. You know, you have to translate it, but you can do it. So the original imprint is, if I do this thing, I'm not going to be loved. And it's not just loved by parent, remember, because they're loved by that particular person, because that person is everything. As we age, that original imprint is perpetuated by us trying to avoid certain parts of ourselves or trying to avoid certain behaviors that reveal parts of ourselves because we don't want to be rejected again. It's extremely painful, but it's an emotional imprint. So as we age, we don't have a vocabulary usually for what that wounding is. We just develop a lot of avoidance behavior in order to ensure that we will remain loved. But you can't edit any part of yourself out. You can't. It's just not possible. None of us can. We all have all the pl we each have all the planets, we have all the signs, we have all the houses, you know, we have the angles, we have everything. You can't avoid any of it. As we age into adults who are capable of analyzing ourselves and understanding ourselves on deep levels, we often don't have the ability to tap into this Chiron wounding specifically because it's an emotional wound that's imprinted on essentially an infant part of ourselves. So we will talk, we will journal, we will analyze, we will read self-help books, we will call astrologers and psychics, and we'll do all these things that have a lot to do with our minds. And we can't get at the original Chiron wounding via our minds. It has to be through our hearts, our fourth chakras, our feeling centers. The language of emotion and the willingness to experience what that pain is, and then changing our minds about it is the aside, which I'll get into in a bit, is the key to unraveling this Chiron wounding. So Chiron in a lot of us about this expected rejection. You know, this, I can't get rid of this part of myself, but when it's apparent, I get rejected. You know, that whole thing is at the root of a lot of misfires and unhealthy routines and habits and patterns that adults have because they can't get inside the emotional core by analysis and with the mind and with words, with logic and vocabulary. It's always counter to logic because you can say, "Oh, but if your mother treated you that way, it doesn't mean other people would." But this imprint happens when you're an infant again. So you can't get in there with words because the babies don't have words. You don't have logic. You can't understand language. And with any of us, we can evolve with Chiron, you know, not just through our wound, but evolve with Chiron by getting inside the question, what's the point of pain and suffering? And it's not just asking the question, but it's also feeling into it, which means feeling into your own pain and suffering, whatever you might be carrying. The answer, I'll just tell you, not that you don't have to do the homework, but the answer will end up having to do with choosing to remain heart open in the face of pain and suffering. When you're doing that, it will often look like compassion, but it's critical to get that compassion for yourself is needed in order for any compassion you show for others to really do anything of value. If you have compassion for others without compassion for yourself, you can accomplish a lot in the moment for those people. But if you have compassion for self and then live from that and express compassion for other people, you are you offer others a gift of being an example. So the range of Chiron expression goes from totally and utterly compassionate to totally and utterly avoiding any scenario that stirs up pain. And if you look at yourself or look at people in your life, you'll see that you fit somewhere in that range of possibility. We cannot deal with other people's pain until we know how to deal with ours. You know, we cannot deal with the suffering around us if we don't understand what to do with our own suffering. Going back to the idea of the wounded healer, when we do identify suffering and pain within ourselves, we're taught culturally, because of the emphasis on the myth of the wounded healer, he has to die in order to escape his pain. You know, that's basically the cultural message. That's what we basically teach each other since Chiron's been coming into our vocabulary 32 years ago. But the real question, or the real opportunity, is in changing our minds about what pain and suffering are for. So this is kind of a spiritual warrior kind of thing, because you have to alter your relationship with your own pain, with all the things that hurt you, with all the ways you've been rejected. You have to step into and alter your relationship with it. What I do with clients in my counseling, astrology, and mediumship practice is to help them learn how to parent that inner infant in the way that that inner infant wasn't parented. Because one of the things about Chiron is that we're still waiting for someone else to do something for us. We're still waiting for someone else to accept us. And we have to accept ourselves in order to make any progress with our Chiron wounding. So I walk people through that process. Sometimes I use mediumship or the psychic thing that I have to identify the age at which this happened and what maybe the details had to do with, or what the theme was about, and then help that person kind of identify the frequency of what that inner voice is about, that inner child. And sometimes dealing with, you know, the manifestation at 6 years old is easier, and so we're not locked into the original event, but definitely that feeling, you know, and perpetuating that sense of rejection because we expect it, just for being who we are. So I will walk people through that, and I've had some really great results with people unplugging from the expectations of that parent coming through for us, or if, you know, that expectation is put onto someone else in our lives, a sibling or even a spouse or even a child, kind of taking that back, taking back that projection and taking care of it themselves. It's really powerful work that helps people essentially change their emotional lives from the inside out. And I'm not talking that everybody is walking around being a wreck, you know, the walking wounded, but this rejection in infancy shapes us in really deep ways. And even people who are highly functioning, wonderful adults have this thing happening inside. So it's not even obvious for everybody. But if you really look at your behavior and how, you know, relative to your Chiron placement, your Chiron configuration in your chart, how you might avoid certain parts of life in order to avoid getting rejected, it will become apparent. And the last thing I want to say about Chiron is that it's an emotional sensitizer. It gives us insight into the emotional realities, energetic emotional realities of other people. It doesn't have to be conjunct your moon or conjunct Venus or in the seventh house or on your sun for you to have a sensitivity to what's happening with other people. But your sensitivity is going to be kind of tuned, you know, that radio dial will be tuned into the suffering relative to that symbolism in other people, right? So if you're Chiron is in Capricorn, you're gonna pick up on people's issues about authority and maturity and concrete nurturing. You're not gonna pick up every single issue. So it's kind of like a kind of specific frequency that you're tuned into. But it is emotionally sensitizing, especially by transit. Whatever it touches by transit in any aspect, it offers this opportunity to get more emotionally sensitive. So one of the things as we grow with Chiron, one of the ways we experience that is if we're not sure how to have our own sensitivity, we're not sure how to deal with the sensitivity of other people. So far, I've talked about that in terms of specifically pain and suffering, but it's really just emotional reality that's different than being sensitive in a lunar Cancerian fourth house way, you know, with the moon. It's a little different. So the Uranus Chiron oppositions are always two bodies roughly 180 degrees away from each other in the chart. Two bodies are points, and that 180 degrees is half of the 360 degree wheel. So there is the possibility of feeling like it's a standoff, right? Like gunslingers in the middle of the street waiting to draw. It could be an argument, right? You and I have different aims, and one of us probably has to win. That's kind of a standard way of understanding it and experiencing it in a place, you know, like this, which is rooted in dualism. But one of the, you know, when we talk about you and having some kind of opposition in your chart, when I think of what's happening inside your being as a meeting, that means that there are two people at the meeting who are opposed. They have different ways of doing things, they have different opinions, they have different wants, different desires, you know, different agendas. The high side of it is to understand that each can offer the other reflection, right? In this case, Uranus can see Chiron in a way that Chiron cannot see itself. So we have this dynamic, and lots of us, in most of us, I think it's a standoff. In most of us, I think it's a standoff. The argument is between creating freedom, which is Uranus, versus feeling the effects of that, feeling the effects of our behavior on other people, which is that Chiron sensitivity. We register the effect on others, the effects on others of what we do. So it's a dilemma. In some ways, it's an apparent dilemma. Given our usual context, it's a dilemma, and the question can look like, what's the cost of freedom? Looking at it a little differently, looking at it with all I've said about Chiron, which is kind of a different angle on it, taken into account, the question can become, how willing am I to risk being an individual? Going a little deeper, you ask, or the question becomes, what is it that I'm really risking? And then, if you're really feeling stout-hearted about this, you can take it a step further, and the question can become, am I willing to be as sensitive as I am in order to fully be and express who I know I am? That Uranian impulse is about authenticity. It is about being free from the structures around you in order to be seen and experience yourself exactly as you are. This kind of the inner original person, the inner genius, the inner inventor, the inner innovator. With this dilemma, most of us are unsure how to resolve it. We don't know how to do it. So we will choose one over the other, or we'll stay in a perpetual state of internal conflict about this choice to be free. Along the way, of course, we'll learn a lot about these two energies, right? We'll learn a lot about them if we're willing to. But many of us are in that conflict of not being exactly sure how to differentiate ourselves if standing out is going to get us rejected, either for our behavior or for just being who we are. I'm going to take this opposition through the houses and give you a tour of the Uranus Chiron opposition in each pair of houses. The first one is if Uranus is in the first. Oh, let me just say that some of you will have out of house, you know, oppositions where Uranus will be in the first and Chiron will be in the sixth, but they'll still be an orb, and you just kind of have to adjust. Given what you know about the houses, you kind of need to adjust that. But I'm just going to give you the basics because most of the people will have this opposite in the appropriate houses. So Uranus is in the first, Chiron's in the seventh. the conflict is I need to be free in my personal expression and in how I use and relate to my body, but I can't afford to be rejected by others for what I do to create that freedom. This idea of reflection is easier to see with when one is in the first and the other's in the seventh, as I explain this, because the first house is always the house of self, and the seventh house is always the house of the other. But this is part of what's happening with every opposition. You know, if Uranus is the thing, Chiron is the other. If Chiron is the thing, Uranus is the other. And so what each has to reflect to the other can be paralleled through all the houses with this. So Uranus in the first, I need to be free. I need to do what I want to do. I need to use and relate to my body in my own original ways. But the opposition to Chiron, this reflection, is very conscious of the effects of your behavior on other people. You know, every time you do the Uranus first house thing, you're setting yourself apart from people. Chiron in the seventh in opposition is going to say, yeah, but wait a minute, look at what just happened. That other person felt this way when you did that. You know, so, and it's not only about the other person, but it's about that other person's treatment of you. So not even just that she was hurting. That's definitely a part of it, because the Chiron in the seventh sensitivity is just simply to what's happening with other people, but also in how that's gonna relate to your acceptance or rejection by those people. Moving on to Uranus in the second house and Chiron in the eighth house, the statement is: I need to be free to pursue and live according to my own value system, but I can't afford to be left behind or abandoned by those most important to me for expressing that value system. You know, as we read about the second house, we'll hear it's about money, and we'll hear it's about lots of different things that kind of relate down to the material world, but behind that has to do with our own value system, what is important to us. And then the eighth house, behind what we hear about sex, death, and other people's money, is intimacy, which can be looked at in terms of honesty. This is where I show you who I really am. The second house would be how I know who I really am, you know, according to what's important to me. And that eighth house is what's important to us. But I have to show you in order to find out if you're somebody that is trustworthy, if you're somebody that I can bond with on a very deep level. So this argument might keep someone with Uranus in the second and Chiron in the eighth from really being original about his or her value system, because of the impact it has on the people who are most important in his or her life, and how how we live together given that impact. Moving on to Uranus in the third house and Chiron in the ninth house, the statement is: my mind needs to be free to explore new possibilities, new information, new data, but I'm not sure how to have a container to put everything I learn in. I'm not sure how to have a framework for that. I'm not sure how to believe in anything I learn. Uranus in the third says, the way I communicate, the way I think, what I'm interested in is pretty out there, is all over the place, is not what everyone else is thinking about or believe or learning. But the Chiron in the ninth says there's some kind of wounding to the belief system. There's some kind of rejection for what the person believes. So the mind needs to be free, but I'm not sure how to believe things. So I'm going to collect all these data. I'm going to collect all these pieces of information. And I'm going to expect, if I thread them together, that's the source, you know, in order to have some kind of meaningful structure about them, right? To live according to, right? Because the ninth house has to do with the overarching thing according to which we live our lives, right? The framework in which we live, which is about belief. The wounding is about belief. So I'm not sure where to put that. I'm not sure what to believe in and not get rejected for it. Moving on to the fourth house and tenth house, where Uranus is in the fourth and Chiron's in the tenth, the statement is, I need freedom to live in and according to my own personal inner reality, but I'm not sure how to live in the world in productive ways if I do that. Which, I'm, you know, is another part of this is I'm not sure how to get respect in the world. I'm not sure how to achieve something lasting with a place in the world if I really individuate myself personally. So this is kind of like, again, this fear of how free can I be given the realities of the reflection I get. In the fifth house, with Chiron, or I'm sorry, Uranus in the fifth and Chiron in the 11th, the statement would be, I need freedom to create and express myself individually, but I'm not sure how to do that in social situations with others without standing out so much that I get rejected. So that Chiron in the 11th, this is about a wounding within groups. Uranus in the fifth is about absolute freedom and personal expression, creativity, and pursuits of pleasure, right? What we do to have fun. But then that Chiron in the 11th is going to, in this opposition, expect to be rejected for how that's perceived by others. With Uranus in the sixth and Chiron in the 12th, the statement is, I need freedom to determine my own sense of duty and responsibility, but I know there's something more to the big picture surrounding me, and I'm not sure how to frame that knowing in terms of the reality around me. So Uranus in the sixth says, I need to be free in how I do things. I need to be individual. In the sixth house, a lot of people fit in to team structures, to work structures, right? Organizational structures. We understand, the ways in which we can be cogs in bigger machines, cogs in wheels. And in the 12th house, all that's off. In the 12th house, we're talking about connecting to greater realities. So I need to be free to do things my own way, but I know that there is a greater connectedness that if I really individuate, I might prevent myself from connecting to, which essentially could feel, I mean, not to get too specific, but it could feel like if I really do things my own way, I'm not going to be able to be accepted by the universe as it works naturally, right? So you can see that tension between needing the freedom but also needing to be accepted. When Uranus is in the seventh and Chiron's in the first, the statement is, I need freedom within my relationships and to have relationships in which I can maintain autonomy, but I'm afraid to risk showing my uniqueness because I'll be rejected for it, right? So Uranus in the seventh says, I need my relationships to be free. I need to be free within them. I might need different kinds of relationships. But Chiron in the first is about rejection of self. So there can be a doubt about the validity that you even have to exist. So as you look at the kinds of relationships you want, and you know you need freedom, you need to upgrade things about relationships with Uranus in the seventh, you might doubt that you can actually participate in those because there's something wrong with you, right? So the Chiron rejection with wounding in the first, sorry, the Chiron rejection with Chiron in the first, will have to do with just the sense of self in general. And so this is going to play out in the relationships. When Uranus is in the eighth and Chiron's in the second, the statement is, I need to be free to express intimacy and honesty in my own ways and with people of my own choosing. But I'm afraid that you'll reject me once you know more about my value system, like what I think is important about me, life, and the world. There's that call to have freedom within intimate relationship and to be honest and to be uncompromisingly honest. And yet, Chiron in the second, the fear of rejection will have to do with once you really know who I am, you will think I'm nothing. With Uranus in the ninth and Chiron in the third, the statement is, I need freedom to explore the hows, whats, and whys of belief, but I'm afraid of rejection for how I think, learn, and communicate them. How I think about them, how I learn them, how I communicate about them. So there's this need to be totally free in the right brain and in the belief system and in this overarching idea, right, that we all live according to one. But then the Chiron in the third is that there's a wounding to the voice. What I have to say, what I think, what I'm interested in isn't worthy and isn't going to be supported, and it's going to get me rejected. Okay, so with Uranus in the 10th and Chiron the Fourth, the statement is, I need freedom to be myself in my community, society, culture, world, right? Whatever public sphere it is. But I'm afraid of rejection because my inner self will be obvious if I do it. So there's something in here about the reasons for, you know, doing Uranus in the 10th, right? Individuating yourself in public. That the reasons, you know, who you know yourself to be on truly on your inner landscape, right? Who you are when nobody else is around, that you'll expect rejection for that. With Uranus in the 11th and Chiron in the 5th, I need freedom to move in the directions I want, to associate, network, and socialize and work with whomever I want, but I'm afraid that my individual voice and my input, what I have to offer personally that expresses who I am, will be rejected by others in those groups. That Uranus in the 11th wants to network in new ways, wants to look forward, wants to find forward-looking people who want, you know, who want the future to look like it wants, right? Like he or she wants. And then that Chiron in the 5th is that, yeah, but my own personal input is going to get me rejected from those groups. With Uranus in the 12th and Chiron in the 6th, I need freedom to be connected to divinity or other realities or realms, but I'm afraid that how I get there will get me rejected, right? So, and if you re-listen to this, you can hear how, you know, the difference between Uranus in the 6th and Chiron in the 12th, for example, and Uranus in the 12th and Chiron in the 6th, and you can see how it's kind of turning it around a little bit. But in with Uranus in the 12th, you need freedom to be connected to these other realms in whatever way works for you. You need to be free of any conventional ways of understanding dreams, of having dreams, right? Of altering consciousness. You need to be free of convention. And yet, this Chiron in the 6th says, yeah, but the methods, right? The ways I do it, the ways I get there, might get me rejected. So there's a difficulty with all of these about being different, right? Uranus says you have to be free, and Chiron says, yeah, but you're already different and people already reject you for a certain thing, or would if you didn't stifle it or try to edit it out of your personality. So going back to this idea of oppositions being dilemmas, you know, use the imagery of gunslingers in the middle of the street about to, you know, have their little standoff, decide their contest, resolve their argument by one of them going down. And then I also said that we can also gain perspective from the other when we're in that, geometric situation, the opposition, that we can gain insight and reflection from other people that we can't get about ourselves, and so that can be actually very useful if we're willing to see it, which is essentially willing to be vulnerable to hearing about ourselves from someone else's point of view. When we are willing to do that, it takes us into more self-understanding, because we have the story on ourselves, but when somebody presents something different that we can't see, you know, we can, if we take that in, we can go deeper into self-understanding, you know, understanding how we appear to others, how we are to others, not just to ourselves. But then understanding leads to acceptance. So the more you understand yourself, the more you're going to accept yourself. And the idea of self-acceptance leads me to the context for why this class or audio thing that you've been listening to sprung into existence about an hour and a half ago as I was eating my breakfast, kind of out of nowhere, though I've been working with the ideas for a long time, but all of a sudden it came into focus. The context is that, you know, we're living on Earth through energetic shifts. You know, you might be feeling or hearing that time is speeding up or that things are changing on Earth, and that you might have heard that it's related to the end of the Mayan calendar, which happens in late 2011. It's often referred to as 2012, but the calendar itself actually ends in late October 2011. And then so until that winter solstice in late December of 2012, there's things settling, things taking shape, things kind of getting rooted and settling. So it's not that calling it 2012 is inaccurate, it's just the actual Mayan calendar ends in 2011. So these shifts we're living through have to do with the evolution of consciousness. I don't want to go into this a lot, but I want to frame Chiron's, the opportunities related to Chiron to us in terms of this, because it was when I was asking about 2012 that the new channeling on Chiron started to come through. So the Mayan calendar was devised to track the evolution of consciousness. When the calendar ends, we will have arrived at, I suppose, the end of the evolution of consciousness will be one way to say it. But where you are in your consciousness, like how you use your consciousness, is up to you. It's all about what you choose. Everything that's in your life, people, the kinds of foods you eat, where you go, what you think about, what kind of media you consume, like what the message, what the energy is behind and within all of those things affect your consciousness, and all of those things are up to you. So when we talk about the evolution of consciousness and hitting the end of the Mayan calendar, it's not that suddenly everybody on Earth will have this kind of miraculous change in their consciousness. It means that those who choose to allow their consciousness to shift can have some interesting things happen. Interesting things being defined as how we understand ourselves, how we experience ourselves, how we understand our connectedness to the rest of reality, not just other beings on the planet, but also perhaps beings in other places. And if you're hearing that and you're saying, "Oh my God, he talks about aliens and all this stuff," I happen to be someone who is not opposed to this idea, because I've channeled aliens, and I mean I've channeled some deceased people and some ascended masters, and I've also channeled some aliens. And I'm not afraid of this. There's nothing to be afraid of. What we should be afraid of is not being willing to experience our true natures. When I say that, I'm talking about our spiritual nature. So as Chiron fits into this end of the Mayan calendar and these opportunities to shift our consciousness, we have the opportunity to experience ourselves as the spiritual beings that we are, not just understanding ourselves as our minds or our circumstances, like our work or our homes or our families, but understanding ourselves as spiritual beings connected to everything else in creation. Chiron fits in here because Chiron, to do Chiron in a healthy way, requires us to be in our hearts, requires us to have our fourth chakras, our heart centers, online. When we do that, we have access to everything that's stored in there. And unless you've worked on clearing it out, you have stuff stored in there. This is just how it works. We collect experience, some of it's painful. We have meaning associated with what those experiences are, and we carry that meaning. We carry the pain and what it means about us and means about the world and life with us. So as we get into our hearts, which is one of the invitations for the end of the Mayan calendar, because the heart chakra, the heart center, connects us to our whole being. It's kind of the foundation. It's kind of like the place where all parts of us connect, right? So it's our body, our mind, our spirit. It's connected to everything. So to understand ourselves as spiritual beings requires having all of our parts up and running, right? So if we're cut off from our bodies, if we're not clear on what's happening in our bodies or what our bodies need, right? Or the kinds of foods our bodies would like us to eat, if we're not conscious of that stuff for any reason, that disconnect is going to keep us from understanding more of our true nature. Like, our true nature isn't just spirit. Our true nature is spirit in the form of a person. That's what this true nature is about. The real opportunity with Chiron, relative to all of this stuff about 2012 and the end of the Mayan calendar and these shifts in consciousness, is that if we hold meaning with our pain and suffering, with the old memories, then we create those situations again. We perpetuate those circumstances and those ways of being. So with the Chiron wounding, I expect rejection for whatever, and you can do all the keyword work with however it is in your chart. But as long as I expect that, I will get that. The reason that you expect it is because of the meaning you put on the original experiences. If your parent is everything, then this rejection is deserved, right? I can't afford to be the Chiron self. I can't afford to let my Chiron out because it will get me rejected. And remember, you know, going back to the earlier part of this audio thing that we're doing together here, when we're the infants see that parent as everything, as God, as goddess, as the universe, as creator, as everything, right? So the chance right now with shifting our relationship with Chiron to clear out our hearts, right? To change our relationship with our emotional bodies, to be willing to feel everything we can feel, and then learn to let feelings go. Learn to let our emotional natures not just be redefined factually, not at all, but our relationship with our emotions. This is a giant key to the end of the Mayan calendar. Can we accept who we are? Total and utter radical self-acceptance. Can we do that? That depends on who we think we are. And as we live Chiron stories and feel rejected for being exactly who we are, we keep ourselves from knowing our true natures as spiritual beings, part of the big, great, big, giant thing that is, which is the divine, capital D, divine. You know, knowing and accepting ourselves as part of that. Another level of the opportunity in at the end of the Mayan calendar is in learning that we, and really truly deeply connecting with the fact that we can create our realities. Except that we have to learn to accept the ways in which we've been creating these things all along. So I do a lot of teaching about the soul's journey, which fits in with this, you know, understanding what the soul is here to do, and understanding that we've created our experiences to fit thematic emphases that we've signed up to learn about as humans. But in this specific context of Chiron, the meaning that we tend to put on what happens to us and this rejection story really can limit our expansion of consciousness, our evolution into allowing ourselves to be affected by the energetic shifts happening on Earth right now. I go into a lot of the 2012 stuff and Chiron and three other archetypes in a natal report that I offer via my site. It's called Living in the Present Tense. It's an original report. And it uses four archetypes, including Chiron, to look at what emotional wounding we might be holding on to with certain kinds of meaning, and aims to help you change your mind about that meaning. What does it mean that this thing happened to me? And what does it mean that I'm wired this way? So that's available via my site at tdjacobs.com if you're interested. If you were born between 1951 and 1991, you can ask yourself now, how willing am I to let this tension that drives some evolution in consciousness, this tension between Uranus and Chiron, this urge to be free, but this sensitivity to the reactions of others and a sensitivity to the pain of rejection that we don't want to recreate, right? Personal evolution always requires giving something up. Talking about this opposition, what we have to give up is being unwilling to be as sensitive as we are, right? To learn to create freedom even though we're that chironically sensitive. To create freedom anyway, even though we know people are going to react to us and What we have to do is not take the rejection in the same exact way. We need to change our minds about what their reactions mean. You know, what it means is that it makes them uncomfortable when we do things that are out of the norm, if they are uncomfortable, right? It doesn't mean that we shouldn't individuate. It doesn't mean we shouldn't be our Uranian selves. You know, we've been in the Piscean age about 2100 years, and we're headed to the Aquarian age. And I don't think it's here yet. I think we're in the something's in the air phase, and people are starting to kind of get a whiff of it in the air. So I don't think we're actually there, but lots of people are picking up on the scent in the air. And, you know, if you're called to alter your relationships, change what you do for a living that is more meaningful to you personally, right? If you're called to alter your diet radically, to move to a different part of the country, to get spiritual or re-spiritualize or some kind of, you know, call out of your norm, then you're somebody who's getting a whiff of what's in the air. And so you're probably developing yourself into somebody who can teach others about how to shift from Piscean ways of being into Aquarian ways of being, even if this shift is not complete around you during your life, right? You're being somebody who's helping other people, a teacher, a guidepost, right? A Herm along the way. So what we have to give up is our unwillingness to be sensitive, but what has to happen to do that is to change our minds about all these discrete experiences, all these painful experiences that we've had. So the sensitivity that Chiron brings is a gift. If we can develop compassion for ourselves deeply enough to let Chiron do what it wants to do in our lives, which will result in our being different. One of the things I didn't talk about in Chiron's story is that he lives out in the middle of nowhere. He lives on the pale of society. He lives outside of town. And when these students and apprentices come to him to learn, they travel. They have to go outside town. You know, he's not accepted by human society. He's not accepted by actually the other centaurs because he's different. He wasn't born of any of their genetic lineages because he was, born from the nymph mother and the Kronos as his father, each of whom was in the form of a horse. So he comes out half horse, half human, but he's not a centaur in the same way. So when you do the Chiron thing, you do set yourself apart. You will feel different than other people, but it's already happening. This part of you is already there. Everyone's unique. So why are we still beating ourselves up about it?